let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome back to Let's Talk About. I'm Jason and this is the next episode in the Tech Talk little mini series that I've been doing. I don't know how long this series is going to go. Basically, probably until I run out of things to talk about because I'm constantly doing research on climate technology and just interesting future technologies that have the possibility of reshaping human life as we know it. And just because, you know, I like to have some interesting topics to talk about week after week and don't have to rehash the same conversations that seem to happen constantly on social media and in the news. But first off, I hope you're all out there listening to this, keeping cool right now. As I'm recording this, it's Monday, the 20th. It's 29 degrees outside. You probably can't hear it, but over in my bedroom, the air conditioner that we have set up in there is going haywire. It's been going constantly since probably early Sunday morning. And it just has not taken a break. It has not relaxed. Yesterday we had that going. We had two fans going. We had the ceiling fan here in where my office slash our living room is. It's been crazy, and I hope you're all doing well. You're drinking water, staying hydrated, somewhere cool, making sure you have electrolytes. It's definitely a scorcher, but it looks like it's going to turn around pretty well. But this really, as my editor said this morning, we really do live in a time of extremes, because, you know, this is climate change right here. We experience major shifts in long-term weather patterns. We just had weeks of rainy, wet weather after a very elongated winter that was incredibly snowy. Now we are moving into some very hot temperatures, and it's probably going to stay this way. Just switching between extremely hot temperatures and cold, rainy temperatures up until the fall, where it looks like we're on track for another extremely cold winter. But anyway, that's not what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about something that I actually found out about very recently. I found out about this weekend. And it is an amazing project out of Cambridge University in the United Kingdom. And at Cambridge, scientists, researchers have been able to power a microprocessor continuously for over a year using nothing but algae. Yes. So this is an article straight from Cambridge University. Researchers have used a widespread species of blue-green algae to power a microprocessor continuously for a year and counting, using nothing but ambient light and water. Their system has potential as a reliable and renewable way to power small devices. Now, this isn't going to revolutionize how we power our cities and in our homes, but it does have implications for how we power things like our computers and our phones and our desk fans and our lamps and all these other smaller electronic devices that require, you know, smaller amounts of electricity. And looking at the image, it's about the size of a AA battery, and I'm looking at an image of it right now, and it's quite small. It's made completely out of recyclable materials. It's basically two pieces of metal that are screwed into looks like a plastic or glass frame that has water and the algae inside of it. And you're able to hook up this, effectively this battery, to the microprocessor, and by pointing sunlight at it, it's able to, through photosynthesis, generate energy. So this is, again, from the article published by Cambridge University. The system, comparable in size to a AA battery, contains a type of non-toxic algae called cyanocystis. I cannot say this for the life of me. Cyanocystis. That naturally harvests energy from the sun through photosynthesis. The tiny electrical current this generates then interacts with an aluminum electrode and is used to power a microprocessor. The system is made out of common, inexpensive, and largely recyclable materials. This means it could be easily replicated hundreds of thousands of times to power large numbers of small devices as part of the Internet of Things. The researchers say it is likely to be the most useful in off-grid situations or remote locations where small amounts of power can be very beneficial. Quote, the growing Internet of Things needs an increasing amount of power, and we need this. We think this will have to come from systems that can generate energy rather than simply store it like batteries, said Professor Christopher Howe in the University of Cambridge's Department of Biochemistry, joint author of the paper. He added, quote, our photosynthetic device doesn't run down the way a battery does because it's continually using light as the energy source. Now, this is very important because one of the issues that we are currently facing with energy is energy storage. We can produce tons and tons of energy from renewable resources, but that excess energy has to go somewhere. I said on a few occasions in previous episodes that right now, Manitoba Hydro, which runs almost entirely off of renewable hydroelectric energy, produces more energy. It generates more energy than is required by the province of Manitoba. And that power just doesn't sit there. We don't have these massive batteries where we store all this excess energy for a rainy day. This power is constantly being generated and needs to be used. So we need to put it somewhere. So what we do right now is we send it out to different jurisdictions. We send it to Saskatchewan, send it to North Dakota, Minnesota, Ontario, provinces we have contracts with in order to use this excess power that we're generating. But one of the ways that we're trying to work within this system, or one of the ways that we're looking to kind of harness renewable energy in a way, is looking at ways to store this energy in large batteries and move it from place to place. So we can generate power somewhere and then basically ship a battery somewhere else. What this does is it creates a constantly running source of energy. So it's like, you know, you might say, you know, you can just have like a solar panel on your roof doing the exact same thing. Well, yes, that's true. But this is just another piece of that puzzle that can be used in a continuous manner. It's, as it was said by Dr. Howe, our photosynthetic device doesn't run down the way a battery does because it's continually using light as the energy source. It's not like we charge it, put it somewhere, and it runs down. It is constantly generating electricity to constantly power the devices that you have. And before we continue on, there's actually something that I need to define as part of this reading here, and that's the Internet of Things, or IoT. So the Internet of Things at a broad level are physical objects with sensors, processing ability, and software that connect and exchange data with other devices and systems over the internet or other communications network. So the Internet of Things is the interconnection between all of our devices in the world as they're exchanging data. So like my computer, my phone, if my television, I can connect my phone to my TV and they're exchanging data through Wi-Fi. My phone exchanges data with my car through Bluetooth. If I call my girlfriend right now, our phones are exchanging data through a cellular network or the internet if we're making the call on Wi-Fi. So the Internet of Things is this complex system of interconnected devices that are connected through the internet, usually. So that's what we need to... You need to, when they're saying Internet of Things, they're just saying interconnected devices that are connected through a certain system. So from the article again, in the experiment, the device was used to power an ARM Cortex M0 Plus, which is a microprocessor used widely in Internet of Things devices. So your phone, your computer, or whatever. It operated in a domestic environment and semi-outdoor conditions under natural light and associated temperature fluctuations. And after 6 months of continuous power production, the results were submitted for publication. The study is published today in the Journal of Energy and Environmental Science. And there's a link there, and I'll link this article in the show notes as well if you want to do your own reading. But that's the interesting part for me, is it operated in a domestic environment in semi-outdoor conditions. So at home, this wasn't in a lab. This was in a domestic environment. This was at someone's house in a city or a town, and semi-outdoor conditions. So it was outside part of the time under natural light. So they were not using a UV lamp. They weren't artificially generating light in some way. It was just natural sunlight in the UK. And associated temperature fluctuations. And we know that the UK, the temperatures are largely consistent, but can fluctuate. They fluctuate throughout the year. And especially in 6 months, that could be from January to June. That could be from June to December. That's half the year and multiple seasons of temperature fluctuations as the kind of climate clock runs throughout a year. And that's what's interesting to me, is that this device was not tested in terms of the measurements and the results that have been published in this particular article. This is beyond a laboratory environment. It's very easy to look at a piece of technology like this that's been tested in a lab and say, oh, this is great, this is revolutionary. But the issue is when we start to transfer technology from a lab environment to a live environment, things change. That's why, you know, throughout COVID, I mentioned it in a previous episode, but the effectiveness of a vaccine in laboratory trials is very different than in real life, because in real life, there are different parameters. There are different variables that each individual person undergoes, so that effectiveness percentage, whatever it is, fluctuates person to person. Some people it might be completely like 100% effective, some it might be 50% effective, just because of the different variable factors depending on your occupation, your family size, your personal health, you know, whatever. So seeing that it continuously for 6 months, and now we know for a year, it continuously powered this microprocessor, and microprocessors are a base piece of technology in the Internet of Things, or in these interconnected systems, these devices that we use every single day. The fact that it was doing it in a domestic environment where it is subject to extreme variation and extreme variable changes, so variations in light, in cloud cover, in temperature, which because there is inside this battery cell, there is a living organism that is subject, that is subject to the same rules that, you know, it would in a natural environment. This blue algae that exists in oceans and waterways is susceptible to changes in temperature, is susceptible to changes in sunlight, is susceptible to changes in its environment that could kill it, or severely harm. If you've ever planted a garden, and I only say this because I was planting a garden this weekend, and it took a heck of a lot of work, and we've been watering it constantly because it's been super hot, but the conditions in which a plant, because this is a plant, algae is a plant, conditions in which a plant exists impact the health and yield, per se, of that plant. So the relative health, just because it survives, doesn't mean that it's a healthy plant. But with, even with this variation in natural sunlight and temperature in the semi-outdoor environment, this natural environment that is existing in, it was able to survive and continue to generate enough power to continually run this microprocessor. It would be very easy in a laboratory environment to directly and carefully control the environment that this cell is in order to produce the best results or produce median results or average results. But having it actually tested in a physical environment, in an environment where this device would reasonably be used, is fascinating. And it's actually quite good. The doctors continue to go on. This is from Dr. Paolo Bombelli, who is also part of the Cambridge University Department of Biochemistry, who led the paper that they published in Energy and Environmental Science. Quote, "We were impressed by how consistently the system worked over a long period of time. We thought it might stop after a few weeks, but it just kept going." So the article goes on, "The algae did not need feeding because it creates its own food as it photosynthesizes. And despite the fact that photosynthesis requires light, the device can even continue producing power during periods of darkness. The researchers think this is because the algae processes some of its food when there's no light, and this continues to generate an electrical current." That is also very interesting, because one of the major complaints and, you know, critics, I guess you could say, of green technology say, oh, when, you know, what if there's no sunlight? What if there's no wind? How are your solar panels and windmills going to continue working? Well, you need to have power storage because they're probably going to be generating excess power, but also something like this. This is a natural living organism that's evolved to survive in on a planet where light is not there 24/7. So this is a living organism that consumes through photosynthesis, because that's how plants eat and consume their nutrients. They photosynthesize UV radiation and turn that into sucrose. We've actually talked about how plants through photosynthesis create sugar in a previous Tech Talk episode, where we talked about how we could use algae blooms or seaweed blooms to replace the world's sugar production, and also use it to break down carbon in the blue carbon in the oceans. But through photosynthesis, this cell, the seaweed within this cell, consumes or creates sucrose, or creates its food matter that it consumes. And because it's evolved on planet Earth, where reasonably in this an environment such as the UK, where it is not sunny 24/7, it by nature of its evolution siphons or, you know, sequences out the consumption of that photosynthesized food material throughout a 24-hour circuit. So it doesn't just create the food substance that it eats and consumes it immediately. It consumes a little bit and then has some held on to that it can consume later. So think about how human beings, how do you lose weight? Well, you run a caloric deficit, and because your body needs a certain amount of calories every single day to function, to power you to move around and to breathe and to have your heart beat and all of that, that excess is drawn from somewhere. It's drawn from the fat store. So your body creates the reason why your fat grows is because your body has more calories than it needs. So it, rather than just pushing those calories out and getting rid of them, it stores them as fat for use later, because we evolved to exist in a world and in an ecosystem where food was not always readily available. So these plants evolve the same way, where they can store their quote-unquote fat to consume it in low light or no light conditions. So by consuming that, it's still generating that energy on a continuous basis. As long as there's sunlight that's able to photosynthesize energy, it can continue to pump out electricity, which is really, really great. The article continues on. The Internet of Things is a vast and growing network of electronic devices, each using only a small amount of power, that collect and share real-time data via the Internet. Using low-cost computer chips and wireless networks, many billions of devices are part of this network, from smartwatches to temperature sensors and power stations. This figure is expected to grow to 1 trillion devices by 2035, requiring a vast number of portable energy sources. That date, 2035, around 2030, when most countries want to be at, and organizations want to be at net zero or carbon neutral or carbon negative by that date, which is going to be difficult if there are now 1 trillion devices that are requiring energy, if they're not using a renewable energy source to power those. Anyway, the article goes on. The researchers say that powering trillions of Internet of Things devices using lithium-ion batteries would be impractical. It would need 3 times more lithium than is produced across the world annually. And traditional photovoltaic devices are made using hazardous materials that have adverse environmental effects. So then they go on to, you know, the funding and all of that of the project. It was funded by the National Biofilms Innovation Center. Just so you know who it was funded by. No conflict of interest there. But that's a really great point, that we can only produce, we're seeing this right now, we felt this quite a lot during, you know, the worst days of the pandemic, where we were not able to produce, and we're still not able to produce, we're not back up to the level we need to be of producing the raw materials to make the things that we need to. I get emails constantly from the dealership that services my car, giving me offers of how much over the suggested value of my car they'd be willing to buy it for. They want to overpay for my vehicle so they can turn around and sell it, because they don't. I took my car in to get the tires changed over, got my winter wheels on, or my summer wheels on there. But I was there a few weeks ago, and they had no cars in the parking lot. They had a couple new vehicles. They had some in the showroom, but mostly the vehicles that are out there are used vehicles, because we don't have the materials required to build the chips and processors that are in vehicles that make them run. There's a reason why you can't, in a lot of instances, if you try and buy a new car, because right now new cars are actually on the whole cheaper than used cars. The issue is that the used car, you can drive it off the lot that day. The new car, you have to wait like 3 to 4 months for them to have the materials, and you're put on a wait list, and you basically have to pre-order your car. So we don't have the materials right now to be able to supply the demand that we have, which is driving up prices and all of that, and contributing to inflation and all these other things. But by 2035, when we have these trillions of more devices, we're not going to be able to produce enough lithium, because lithium is not a renewable resource. We can only produce so much lithium to power lithium-ion batteries. So we need to start looking for alternatives to power our small devices. And that's where this algae battery comes in, where it is a constantly running, constantly charging system that is, you know, obviously biodegradable. You can use recyclable materials to make it. It, you know, it is a living being that is going to just continue. As long as you give it sunlight, it's going to continue on living. This is a great next step in terms of finding an organic renewable resource to replace lithium ion batteries. It's actually really significant because creating batteries themselves, are, as we mentioned in this article here, are made from very hazardous materials. There's a reason why you can't easily recycle batteries, because the acid and components within the batteries are harmful to our environment. So they have to be handled with care. They have to be broken down and recycled in a very specific, very specialized way, or else it will damage our environment. So we need to be smart about how much more we're introducing into the world because of the byproducts or the waste that not only comes with disposing of those batteries in a safe manner once they have run the course of their life, because they only have a certain length of time that they're useful, but also the resources and the pollution and the harmful byproducts created by even creating those batteries in the first place, because you have to mine the lithium, you have to mine the metals that go into the battery, you have to power the factories that run, you know, you have to power you have to put gas in the vehicles that transport those materials from one place to another. You have to power the factories that actually make the batteries, and you have to pay, you have to, you know, have the materials to package up the batteries, and then you have to ship those batteries from the factory to a store, and then you have to drive to the store or have the batteries shipped directly to you from the store. And all of that creates excess carbon and introduces more harmful materials into our environment. So having something like this algae battery that can be created from less recyclable materials, that can be produced in a way that is self-sustaining and long-lasting, we can reduce the need and the number of batteries, lithium ion batteries that we require. Yes, that will put companies like Duracell and whatever in a bad position, because they don't, you know, because they produce the batteries and they don't have a vested interest in, you know, creating an alternative that is not purchased with the frequency that a battery is. That's just capitalism. But we still need, as a species, to say, I'm sorry, if your business cannot survive in the economy, that's not our problem, that's your problem. If we really want to embrace capitalism, we have to look at these companies and say, okay, we're moving in this direction. These are the things we want. If your business can't survive, we don't have to change our needs and change our wants and change how our system functions, and we want it to function just so your company can continue to make money. If you can't survive in this economy, you deserve to fail. Use the same logic they use on poor people on these corporations, because this is an amazing piece of technology. It is shown in, obviously, it's in its infancy. It was powering a singular microprocessor. You're going to need a number of these batteries to power something as complex as a smartphone, for something as long as a smartphone needs to be powered. But it's still an important step forward in showing there are ways that we can power our devices and we can replace these harmful, non-renewable energy sources that we are constantly, constantly wasting in 2022. All right, so we've got about 30 seconds left. I want to thank you very, very much for listening. You've been tuned in live to, or if you're listening live, to Let's Talk About, the Tech Talk series, talking about algae-powered batteries. I'm Jason, you have been the audience. Thank you very much for listening. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep that dial to 101.5. You got some great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your download, like, subscribe, share, do all those lovely things. Catch me on The Hockey Show on Thursday. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everybody, and stay cool.